Welcome to another episode of Jedi and Germs on the Jazz. This is Alan, Jedi Zog. On the other side is John English, Mr. Germs guy. John, say hello.
Hello.
All right, John, this week we've got little to talk about. Obviously the Jazz and a few little bumps and bruises they've gone through. And we're going to wing it because we don't have some show notes set up tonight, and that's okay. We'll just kind of wing it. We'll talk through some things and discuss some of our thoughts on the previous games that we've gone through. Why don't you go ahead and start us off? What are your thoughts?
Well, let's talk about a tale of two games. We had the Pelicans last night, and we had the Heat tonight. People will probably be listening to this tomorrow, but two completely different games. What do you think the main difference was between what happened in New Orleans and what happened in Miami?
Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to catch enough of both games to really pick out a difference, but I will say that it seemed like the energy was a lot higher tonight for all four quarters versus last night for three and a half. Looked like in the Jazz in the fourth quarter last night, the Jazz, it's funny to say they ran out of gas because it was the front side of a back-to-back rather than a back side of a back-to-back, but it seemed like the Jazz's energy and push kind of fell short at about the 5 or 6 minute mark of the fourth quarter last night.
You know, it didn't feel like a lack of energy to me with the fourth quarter in New Orleans. It just felt like they got a little bit behind and then panic started to set in. And all of a sudden, no one was making shots and they weren't going to the paint anymore. And it's like the more they lost their lead, the more they panicked. And it was just this weird freeze up of this 20-point swing. I mean, it was a 41-22 quarter.
Right.
And that's not just their offense is sputtering. That means their defense is completely collapsing. And that was bizarre. And I think that fourth quarter collapse kind of helped fuel them against Miami, where they were just not going to let up at any point. They were going to get ahead by double digits and stay there.
It's called put that gas pedal down and not let up.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we were talking a little off air before we went on. A couple of key moments last night I looked at that third quarter was a quarter of dueling. You had Tyreke Evans on the one side go off, and you had Gordon Hayward on the other side go off. And you had both of them heating up, and Gordon really kind of paced the Jazz through that third quarter, which is their best quarter, as we've seen this year. But then in the fourth quarter, you know, during a stretch where Gordon took a rest on the bench, it seemed that the Jazz, you mentioned the defensive end, they struggled, but offensively, just as much as anything, they struggled to get points. And I wondered at some point in time when we were going to see Gordon come back in the game. In fact, I said that to myself during the game. I thought, you know, Gordon hasn't been in. We're approaching that 4.5 minute mark, 5 minute mark. By that point in time, the Jazz had lost any footing that they had. And I don't know if that, I mean, Gordon sat for a lengthy stretch. I want to say it was 7 or 8 minutes that I was surprised that he sat for that long.
Yeah. I don't know how long he sat, but, one thing I've been doing when I do my post on the last five games, and I wrote this one before this win in Miami, which was nice, which means they've got two wins in their last five. But I was looking at the real plus minus for all the players. And for the five game stretch that I looked at, the Jazz were minus 27 overall. But Gordon was like a plus 15, something like that. And then on the other end, you had Alec Burks was minus 50. So it's like, no matter how the team is doing, as long as Gordon is in there, they seem to be doing okay. But as soon as he's not there, everything just falls apart. They can't seem to sustain anything if he's gone, especially for long stretches. I mean, right now, I would look at this team and say, if we want to win, then we need Gordon to play 40 minutes tonight.
Right. And you can't have that. And I almost wonder if Quinn is okay with some of that right now, because I think he wants some of the other guys to figure it out. So I think he's being patient with the process. And here's the key word here, patience. Patience for Jazz fans, patience for the players, and even patience in the coaching staff. I think, you know, and I said this the other day, I think Quinn is a teacher, and right now he's trying to teach this team to be patient with the process and to be patient and learn the basics of what they're trying to learn before they can move on and progress to the next step.
Yeah. As far as patience goes, what's the difference you see between last year and this year as far as what you can actually tell the players are learning? What are they improving on as far as game goes between last year and this year for the guys that were here in both years?
Well, one of the things I noticed that I learned, and we've talked about Gordon, and I'm going to bring him up again. There was a game, I think it was the Spurs game I went to last week, and sat down and watched that game. There was a key moment in the fourth quarter where Tim Duncan had helped to orchestrate a run for the Spurs, because you knew it was going to happen. And Gordon took the moment and pulled the players aside after a foul was called right before Duncan stepped to the free throw line, pulled them together underneath the basket and talked to them. And it was very interesting to watch, because I found it intriguing to watch Gordon. I think the one area that I think Gordon's different from last year, he's becoming more vocal. It's not just about leading on the floor with the things he's doing, but it seems like he's communicating more this year than I've seen him before. And that's a huge maturity improvement for Gordon Hayward, as well as the team as a whole.
Yeah, and one thing I see with Gordon that I think really is because of the coaching change, you kind of got the feeling from the exit interviews last year that the two players that were most frustrated with Ty was Gordon Hayward and Enes Kanter. And I think you kind of see a little more freedom to his game, where he really knows he's a leader this time. He knows that his coach isn't going to suddenly take him out of the starting lineup or anything. So he's got that, and he's still got a ways to go with that. I mean, there have been some games where he's not playing well and they're losing by 20, and that kind of spreads to the rest of the team if he's in a rut. So he's kind of realizing more and more that he needs to be there every night. He needs to be the star every night, and he needs to lead by example every night. And as the season progresses, I think we're going to watch that growth, because I'm seeing that this year.
I agree with that. I think that's one of the biggest focuses and changes I've seen. You know, talk about player and personnel and what we're seeing is, yeah, that's, he's a part of it. I think overall you see players, I mean, even Kanter, Kanter's game, both offensively and defensively. I mean, at the beginning of the year this year, coming into this season even, I know I was one who was very, very critical of what Kanter had brought to the floor last year on the defensive side as well as on the offensive side. And I'm one who, I'll take a step back and I'll tell you, I've watched him improve both ends of the floor. He's not a great defender, but his defensive positioning on the floor seems to be getting better over the last couple of games. And his offensive, it seems like he's a lot more patient on the offensive end than he was last year as well.
Yeah, and he's a reliable double-digit scorer now.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as he's getting his 30 minutes a game, and he's played 30 minutes a game for quite a while now, you're seeing the confidence build in him. I think it was New York where he only had like 12 minutes I think that really affected him, and he's kicked in that second gear, at least on his offense, since then. And he's become a crucial part of the offense. In fact, I think he has the second most amount of total points on the team now.
Yep. And back to what you mentioned, the two players that probably had the most frustration in their exit interviews, I think you're seeing both of them improve maturity and as well as parts of their game this year as a result of either the coaching change or their own, changes within themselves, what they're doing on the court.
Yeah, and Canner's big thing last year was the young five hardly ever played together until the end of the season. And I think most Jazz fans were dying for the young five to play together, the F5, whatever they were called. But that just never happened until the end of the year. And then I think Ty just kind of went fine and let him play the last few games. So it's like the beginning of this season, we're going through the growing pattern, the growing pains of what should have happened last year.
Right.
And now those pains are starting to be overcome and they're starting to get better.
Yeah.
I will say, man, I wish I could figure out what is going on with Alec Burks.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, tonight he had a moderate 12 points, but they were 12 big points. 12 very good points in that, a few of which came late in the fourth quarter. But no, I agree. He's had his moments of flash of consistency, and then other times where he's just disappeared as well.
And see, he was the only starter tonight with a negative plus minus. And what the Jazz won by 18?
Yeah.
The Jazz won by 18, but he was a minus 7.
Wow.
So when he was for his 30 minutes when he was on the floor, the Jazz were minus 7, and for the 18 minutes when he was not on the floor, the Jazz went plus 25. So
now I wonder if some of that takes into effect the personnel he's on the floor with, though, as well.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. I mean, Gordon was a plus 25 tonight, and him and Burks shared a good chunk of those minutes together. It's like when Burks is on the floor and Gordon isn't, then whatever cast Alec is on the floor with is going to fall apart. But tonight, I missed part of the game too, so I can't pinpoint where exactly it was. But just kind of looking at the box score, I'm looking at, okay, Exum was a plus 15, Hood was a plus 15, Gordon was a plus 25, Favors was a plus 14, Cantor was a plus 10, Trey was a plus 7, and then you see Alec was a minus 7. Now Trey's plus 7, I can kind of see. I think Alec, was he on the floor at the very end of the game? I don't think he was.
Yes, yes, he was.
He was?
Yeah, in fact, he hit a three-point shot with a matter of seconds left in the game.
That's what it was. It was Alec. Okay.
Yeah, the Jazz.
I thought it was Trey that hit the last shot, but I guess it was Alec.
Yeah, in fact, okay, the Heat tried to trap the Jazz in the corner at the corner of the half court line, and
yeah,
they got it to Alec,
okay.
And Alec took a long three to end the shot clock.
That's right, because Burke hit the one. Trey hit the one with 30 seconds, and then Alec hit the one with like 3 seconds.
Yes. Yes.
That's what it was. Okay. And you know what? You say they don't score in the last 30 seconds. That would make Alec a minus 13.
Wow.
So, it's kind of nice they got to pad their numbers there at the end. But see, that just doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand what it is. What's going on why that's happening to Alec right now? Because he's getting his points. I thought he'd be a little better this year in scoring, but he's still having an okay year. Maybe he's not having a $10 million a year
right
here, but he's what is he? He's almost 14 points a game. You know, he's still a really good free throw shooter. He's like over 80%. His assists are up. His rebounding's up. I don't know.
Well, the one thing that is curious to me for him, and, you know, and we talked about this on a previous show too, I think some defenses have scouted him offensively and have forced him, I think, out of his comfort spot. I think that's twofold for Alec. I think that's one. I think the other is the fact that I still don't know if Alec, because Alec is such an ISO player, I don't know that he's figured out where he fits in the offense yet. And that's not to say that's a bad thing yet either. I think it's something, maybe it's a different learning curve for him. But again, I still also think that defenses have figured out that they can bring an extra guy, you know, to cut off his lane, making it very difficult to get to the, you know, to get to the basket, which is forcing him to actually have to prove himself as an outside shooter to get there. I mean, there are some parts of his game that I have actually been improved with, or I have seen improvement on that I like. Like, for example, I mean, and I don't know, you may know what I'm talking about, but against Miami when they were at home, and likewise, I think it was last night against New Orleans, he's learned how to bait guys into some fouls a couple of times now. You know, he gets out there at that three-point line. He baited Wade into it in Salt Lake City, and then he baited, I don't know who was guarding him last night, but he gets in that little moment out there at the three-point line and is learning to put on the moves, kind of like Dwayne Wade's very good at doing, where he baits a guy to come at him on a three-point shot, and they're biting, and it's working out in his favor. That I do like seeing that from him, because he's learning how to get his points in other areas where he's not going to get them when he's driving to the hoop.
Well, Alex's a good three-point free throw shooter, and he's good at going to the free throw. He's second on the team with free throw attempts. He's at 4.8 a game, and he's usually gotten those from all the slashing to the basket he would do. So it is encouraging to see him finding other ways to get those calls and go to the free throw line. I think part of it is he's in the starting lineup now, and you have to have five guys on the floor in your starting lineup. And I think you're right about the role. It's he needs to figure out where he fits in with those five and what he can do to you know, be able to play his game but still be able to help the five, so that everyone can benefit.
He might be, here's my thought, he might be in the same position that Hayward was in, was it 2 years ago, in the starting lineup when you had Al Jefferson, Paul Millsap, you had guys in that starting lineup, and Hayward was that third or fourth scorer and wasn't quite figuring out where he belonged. And I don't know if you remember that, but he went through that stretch for that year. I think Burks is in that same position now. And really, it's not that far off. I mean, Hayward was in his second year that time, maybe third year. And Burks is in that same position now. He's past that sophomore hump. He's now into his third year, and he's trying to figure out that same kind of spot like Hayward was.
That's true. It was Hayward's third year where he was a starter, and then about 15, 20 games into the season, Ty made him a bench guy. And so your starters were, it was Marvin Williams and Paul Millsap. And was it Marvin Williams?
I think so.
Yeah, it was. It was, because we had Mo and Marvin as the starters.
Yeah.
So Gordon became the sixth man, and he worked well in that role, and he kind of rediscovered his game once he was there. I mean, he was still upset he lost his starting position, but yeah, he managed to work it out there, and he became, I mean, he was a really good shooter that year too.
Yes, he was.
It's like he was a really good shooter his rookie year, and then his third year, and now in his fifth year, we need his shooting to get better. It's better than it was last year. Last year, his shooting was just way off.
Yeah.
But Gordon was 41% shooter last year. Now he's 45%. His 3-point shooting is getting better. He was 30%. Now he's 33%. I'd like to see him get up to like 36 or 38. But, you know, baby steps. I think Gordon Hayward's playing awesome this year.
I agree. He's at an all-star level right now.
Yeah, and the way people keep getting injured, he might just find himself in an all-star game. I want to point out the obvious, the difference between the Pelicans and the Heat. The Pelicans, we did not have Favors, and they got Anthony Davis back. And then against the Heat, we did have Favors, and the Heat did not get Chris Bosh back.
So yeah, that's a good point.
To take that into account, too.
Yes, I agree. That's a good point. Although the Jazz still controlled that game against the Pelicans, for three quarters, essentially.
Yeah, they did. And it might have just been Favors, you know, leadership that they missed in that fourth quarter to help calm people down.
You're right, and it could have been. I mean, because Anthony Davis, I don't remember what his final numbers were, but I think he put up close to 30-plus last night, and D-Wade did the same thing on us tonight, but the difference is last night it was a big man that put that up on the Jazz, and you didn't have Favors, whereas tonight it was a guard that put those numbers up on the Jazz, and really there was no contest from the rest of the Heat team. It was Wade. It was the D-Wade show.
Yeah, no one on the Heat made more than three shots besides Wade.
Wow.
Wade was 12 of 19. No one else on the Heat made more than three shots.
Well, in the Heat, I don't remember how many free throws the Heat ended up with, but I believe Wade had 18 or 17 of them.
He had 21.
21.
The Jazz had 24 free throws. Wade had 21.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a 40-24 discrepancy for the Heat, and they still lost by 18.
Wow.
Kind of shows you how bad it was for the Heat tonight.
Well, and David Locke pointed out on the broadcast tonight, too, that D. Wade is the fifth player, I guess, in rankings to be able to score and be able to score against the Jazz. Like, there's, you know, the fifth players all time fifth among players all time against the Jazz to score. You had Jordan on that list. You had LeBron on that list. Allen Iverson on that list. Maybe he was fourth. Kobe on that list. And then I believe D. Wade was the other one on that list of players that have scored on the Jazz, all-time score, you know, leading scorers against the Jazz. So, not surprising that he picked that up and continued tonight.
So with Favors back in the lineup, that means Patrick Christopher and Torrey Murray are inactive. You have any idea what we're doing with those two?
Not a clue. And I don't know much about Patrick coming into this. Well, okay, I don't know much about Murray either. I wonder if the Jazz will simply put them back down to the D League for the time being until needed again. I mean, I don't know. I like the D League where it sits right now because you have the options of calling players up, but it's unfortunately call them up for them to sit on the bench only to send them back.
Well, I figure there must be something going on with practice that's helping them, hopefully. My thought would be might as well send both of them back to the D League until an injury happens.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, unless you're planning to use them in some sort of a trade, and I just don't see, no surprise here, but I just don't see the Jazz engaging in any sort of trade before the trade deadline. And I just don't see it happening. I think they are dedicated to move forward with what they have, and unless something just blows out there that just says, hey, come and get me. I just don't see the Jazz doing it.
I would normally agree. And if Kevin O'Connor was still running things, I'd say, yeah, they're not going to be a trade. But I could see them pursuing something that they think will be beneficial long term, even if that's trading away a young asset or two for a more experienced but better player.
For example?
It could, Oh. Oh, let's say. I just throw out a crazy name that wouldn't happen, but let's say the Jazz find out they can get Kenneth Fareed for Enes Kanter and a couple throw-in pieces.
Okay.
They might look at that and say, here's a much more energetic power forward. We can get him and, you know, crazy name. They wouldn't do it. But if they saw something like that or some kind of opportunity like that, then I could see them going, you know, Fareed's only 24 or however old he is. He could grow with this team and they could have something to build around, or, you know, maybe try to get Millsap back and make him the Jazz man for life. I mean, there's all kinds of things they could do, but I think it would have to be obvious. I think it would have to be an obvious benefit for them to do it.
Right. No, and I think that's the point I was getting at there, is that I just don't see it happening unless it is this is the perfect fit and it's got to happen and the right pieces will fall into place. And they're not going to take a step back in the process, because I think they've taken enough step backs. Now they're looking at stepping forward.
Yeah. And I haven't even thought about any trades they could do. Maybe I'll do that as I get closer to February, but I would say more likely than not, they don't make a trade.
Right.
But if they do, I bet you it's something that won't set them back and yet will still be beneficial long term. You know, they're not going to trade for Rudy Gay, but if they made a trade, they'd do something. I think there'd be a lot of thought behind it, and it would be the right thing, because in Lindsay we trust.
Darren Williams. No, I'm just kidding. Totally kidding.
Yeah. Like, okay, maybe if they have picks. Well, Brooklyn doesn't have any picks. It's like, okay, B. Will and the first pick in 2022 and 2024. And what else you got?
Right. Well, and D. Will's still one of my favorite players, but sorry, damaged goods. I don't know that you're going to get a player that's really going to be much better than the youth that the Jazz have at the point guard position. Just not worth it.
Yeah, I like D. Will. I'm bummed that he still gets booed at games. He loved it here.
Yep.
He realizes he played his cards wrong. He's killed like three coaches. Then everything's just gone wrong for him. He should have been a perennial all-star, and if he had stayed here, that probably would have happened if he could have just worked things out with Jerry. But
right.
But man, yeah, that went south fast, and he's just never been the same player.
Nope, he sure hasn't. All right, so let's look forward now to the rest of the road trip. Jazz have played 3 games on the road, means that they've got 3 more. What's you've probably are more familiar with the schedule coming up. I think Memphis is in that mix, right?
Yeah, I think Memphis is the last. Yeah, okay. So they've got Orlando on Friday, and I hope they treat that like a revenge game.
Yes.
They've got Charlotte on Saturday, which they absolutely should win. Charlotte is a mess right now.
Agreed.
And there's no reason for them to lose that game. And then they play Memphis on Monday. They'll probably lose that game. So that'll round out their road trip. So the long, long Christmas, pre-Christmas road trip, they've never been swept. That streak continues since they got their win in Miami. My call was that they would win 2 games on this trip, and they got Miami, so that's great. They should get Charlotte, and I think they really, really should beat Orlando. They should get a nice little 3-game winning streak here. That would be nice. But because it's the Jazz, I can see them dropping one of those.
Right.
So,
but they got
that's my prediction, but they can win 3 in a row.
Right.
They really should be able to.
And they ended their road losing streak tonight, which was a plus as well.
Yeah, when's the last time they had a road win before tonight?
I don't know. It's been a while.
It was New York.
Yeah, so it's been
clear back on the 14th of November. So it had been a month since they won on the road.
Yeah, their last road swing. So yeah, Yeah, huge win tonight. Huge for a lot of reasons. So, no, I agree with you going forward. The Orlando game, not just a revenge game. I just think, you know, especially the way Derek Favors looked after that game, I think they all know that they could have played better and should have played better. And I expect Friday to be a much different game. And then that Charlotte game, without question, on Saturday should be, we don't want to call it easy, but it's a winnable game. So I would agree with you. I could think they could come out of this at 3-3 off of this road trip. I also see them as a potential coming out of this, you know, at 2-4, or yeah, heaven forbid 1-5, but it's not far-fetched either.
Now, Orlando, you know, they've been looking like they were going to tease for the 8th seed in the East, and they probably still will because the East is just awful. But they've lost 4 of their last 5, so they're reeling a bit. And their two losses were on the road. They lost to Toronto, and then they lost to Boston tonight. So when they get the Jazz, that's the beginning of a 4-game homestand for them. So they'll be ready. But they're 10-18. So they're still not that good a team, and that record is helped by the fact that they play the East a lot. So even though the Jazz lost to them at home, they only lost by 5. And I'm really hoping that in the last 2 weeks they've kind of been able to come together, learn from the Spurs, learn from the Heat, learn from their fourth quarter collapse in the Pelicans, and really go out and play a full 4 quarters against Orlando and get that. I really want them to get that game.
So do I. And I'd like them very much to get that Charlotte game on Saturday as well. In fact, I think that's a key game for Gordon Hayward, if more than anything, but I think it's a key game overall too.
Well, it's actually getting kind of late here, so.
No, understood.
Let's go ahead and wrap this up.
All right. Okay. Well, thanks for joining us this week, folks. Also, check out the new Twitter handle, John, you've set up on Twitter for our show. It's Jedi and Germs, correct?
Yes.
All right. So look for us on Twitter, Jedi and Germs. Follow us. Interact with us. Let us know what you think. Let us know what you got and, you know, what do you want to hear more of? Talk to us. Tell us, you know, what you think of everything. So we look forward to it, and we'll look forward to another show next week. Actually, we may not next week. It's Christmas. But anyway, thanks for joining us for yet another show of Jedi and Germs on the Jazz. John, good night to you. Good night to everybody.
Good night.